SRN.
Welcome to Fresco Disco for March 2014. Right?
That's right.
March 2014.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's the year 2014.
Fresco Disco number 6, I'm pretty sure.
Numero 6?
Is that crazy?
Is it?
We're on
6 of
these things.
That's kind
of messed up. I'm your host, Christopher Crespo, doing another one of these wonderful music-centric bonus episodes. Hang out with Drew Sikogbrew and Drew. How's it going?
It's going, man.
Right on. Yeah, man. Let's do a show about live music, live concerts.
I like it. I've seen a lot of live music.
I've been to doing this. I realized. Oh, you know what?
I mean, hell,
my show prep is terrible because I don't have my list with me. I had my breakout list. Actually, I think you have it. I wrote down like 10 other concerts that I thought of.
I mean, dude, if I really wanted to, all I have to do is go into my bedroom and grab my little thing.
Yeah, you save a lot of your.
Because I saved almost all my ticket stubs.
Man, I wish I saved my ticket stubs because I've been to so many concerts now that I can't remember.
Well, you see, there
a
was
good chunk of them.
There was a point in time though where. We were going to concerts like once a month.
We made it a thing. We were like, we are going to a concert a month.
Yeah.
That's when and the economy was better and there was more money to go around.
Yeah. Some of those I didn't save. I don't remember why. I think because I was seeing too many shows.
A lot of music, man. A lot of live music, but it was awesome.
Oh, it's so great.
It's all good. So we're going to talk about our favorite ones, our five favorite concert experiences. Drew, yours are not in any particular order?
No, not really.
Mine are, so I'm going to go from 5 to 1.
I mean, for me, it's kind of hard to...
It's definitely hard.
It's hard to rank concerts because each concert is its own experience.
Yes, exactly.
It's comparing Apple. Like, I mean, if you're going to see a Hall & Oates show, how can you compare that to... Like going to like the Metallica Summer Sanitarium,
right? You know, that's
I mean,
big,
that's two completely different experiences.
That's
with
true.
Enjoyment for different reasons.
Yes, absolutely.
So I find it kind of hard to rank my concert experiences, but these are definitely five of the ones that I enjoyed the most.
All right, right on. Well, I tried my best to do them. I definitely know my top two. My top two have been that way for a number of years now.
Yeah.
I don't foresee any experience in the future topping these things. We'll get to that when we get to it. But the other three were a little more like, you know, loosey-goosey. So, but anyway. All right, we'll start with you.
All right.
Your first one. And
right.
I'm going to go ahead and get this queued up, y'all. And go in. What do you got, bro?
Well, oddly enough, it's actually probably one of the later concerts I've been to.
Okay.
Normally, most of the shows that I go to are metal shows.
Spoiler alert: a lot of metal this episode.
Wait, hang on. Let me see your list real quick. I think after this, it might be all metal.
I think it is for the most part. Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah. So after this, it's all metal.
So thanks, Drew, for the little
deviation.
Difference. Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yes.
No, yeah. This is Postal Service. The name of the song is "We Will Become Silhouettes." I saw the Postal Service the first time they came around. So 2003.
Take that, people.
They only toured twice.
Drew was cool before cool was cool.
They toured in 2003 and in 2013.
Right.
Because, you know, of all the hoopla, blah, blah,
well,
blah.
They're a weird band where it's like two guys from two different bands actually created music via... What was that? Did you hear that?
Yeah. They created music through the post service.
Through the mail.
Yeah. They were... emailing DVDs.
I wonder if that crazy aesthetic sounds going to come through. I'm not going to bother checking.
We'll see. But
yeah, they said they sent the music back and forth via the mail, hence Postal Service, and then they actually got together for a tour once.
Well, twice. Well, they did once in 2003.
At that time, 2003, it was like
in 2003, they toured, and then everyone was like, all right, when are they going on tour again? When is the next album coming out?
And then
it was over.
Yeah.
There was no other tour. There's never been another album.
The Postal Service is over.
Exactly. Yeah. And they were done, and everyone was like, you know, everyone who missed that concert was like, oh my God,
right.
I cannot believe that these guys toured once, and I missed it.
It was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and people didn't know it.
Exactly.
But you were fortunate enough to be there.
Oh, it was so good.
Was it a good show? Did they deliver?
It was... They delivered hardcore. I mean, normally it's just two guys, but they had a full band. You know, there were instruments being played.
I was going to ask you that. Like, how did they? What was the live presentation?
It was a full band. Bro. So it was that guy singing and playing guitar. Mm-hmm. The other guy on his little keyboard doing his electronic stuff.
All the new
and there was a full band as well.
That's cool.
It's probably the closest thing I will have ever seen to an early Radiohead show. That's the way it felt.
I gotcha.
Because, you know, the music is very produced and electronic and this and that. Mm-hmm. But in the beginning, Radiohead was, you know, they were a band.
Yeah.
For the most part.
They were. For the first few albums, they were.
Exactly.
Before they started breaking out that crazy phone operator switch thing. And
exactly. And I feel like this Postal Service show was a lot like those early Radiohead shows.
Was there an opener?
Yeah. This guy named Sex, spelled C-E-X.
Oh, you listen to that. Yeah, I've heard you listen to that guy a little bit in the past, I think.
He only had a couple decent songs, and it was weird. It was like this weird pseudo-sexual white guy rapper thing. It was odd. But, I mean, the show was really good. It was at the Social and it was packed. So, you know, good times were having.
Oh, that Social is a good venue.
Yeah.
Social's going to come up a lot on this list, I think.
Yes.
Because it's a great venue. It's really small, but it's set up really well. So, pretty much no matter where you are, you're going to get a pretty good view of the band.
Oh, and I don't think I was 21 yet, so I'm pretty sure I had to show up to the show trashed already.
Pre-party.
Exactly, because I don't think I was 21 at the time, because that was 2003. Yeah, no, I was only 20.
Wow.
So.
Look at that.
Well.
Babyface. Well, cool Postal Service, huh?
Oh, yeah, it was a fantastic show.
Enough for you to be like, hey, I remember that one.
Oh, well, it's kind of hard to forget when a band only tours twice in their lifetime.
Right, yeah.
And you were there the first time.
It's pretty special.
Yeah.
It's pretty special. Actually, that is kind of why I picked my number five, mm-hmm. because it's a band that didn't get a tour nationally very much at all. We mentioned them before a few Crespo Discos ago. When we did the, what do we call it? The gems, the unknowns that we were trying to push, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I brought up the Postman Syndrome.
Yes.
Because they put out one full-length album. And then I found out recently that they put out a few years ago, like a bunch of bootlegs.
Okay.
Like early demo stuff, you know? Which was, you know, it's cool. That's right. It's unpolished Postman Syndrome. But let me go ahead and get this song started in here, because right now, so these guys, 2001, 2002, 2003, around that time period is when they were together. They put out their album Terraforming. They're from Jersey, and they were trying really hard to get signed, and for a while there, according to the interwebs, and to me, but according to some people on the interwebs, the Postman Syndrome was pretty much the best unsigned metal band in America for a few months there, especially when Century Media Records infamously turned them down because they said they didn't fit the rest of their the style of the rest of their label, because they're
so
just more like Fear Factory, mm-hmm. and shit like that, which, you know, I guess
this was definitely a more progressive.
Yeah, it's definitely more prog rock. There's still bits of metal in there that are very metal.
There's all sorts of metal in there.
But what they needed was someone just to, you know, help them out, to give them the little bit of financial backing they needed where they could go on tour and get their name out there more. But they never got that. And so what happened was there were a bunch of dudes that they had to play like early shows, and mm-hmm. they had to do a lot of opening spots instead of headlining, because they all had night jobs. That's how they got by.
You rock out during the day and then you go slave away in a kitchen all night.
Yes, exactly. So back in like 2003, now this is the thing, the whole So Many Concerts thing, I think this was during the same trip,
uh-huh.
like around the same few day period, or it may have been consecutive years. I think it might have been the same little time period. But I was in Jersey visiting some family, and a friend of mine was in town too. So we got together, looked online, found Postman Syndrome was playing. First, they were playing an all-day festival thing.
Uh-huh.
That was only like $15 to get in. And they were on at like 2 in the afternoon.
Sweet.
Because, again, they had to go. They had to go to work. So they went on there at 2 o'clock. They played, it was a really crappy little club, and maybe like 100 people there at that time. They played a half-hour set, which resulted, all their songs are long, so it was only about 3 or 4 songs. But it was so good. They were so good. They were so tight live. Everything they do musically, like, it comes across live so well. There was one, I remember one moment, at least one moment, where there's 3 guitarists and the bass player, so 4 guitar players on stage, and they were all doing the tap, tap the fret thing, that all at the same time. So it was all a bunch of it's a bunch of guitar wankery, and it was,
I love me some guitar wankery.
It was beautiful. It was great. And then I saw them again. Maybe it was the next year, because I saw them again opening a show where they were the opener, and then there were like 2 or 3 bands playing, and then He Is Legend was the headliner.
Very nice.
And it was He Is Legend before they turned into this like fake We Want to Be 80s cock rock band, which is really, really annoying. Their first 2 albums, you know, really good stuff. And they headlined, which was cool, but the Postman Syndrome opened again because they had to leave so they could go to work. It was another short set, and they played like 2 songs because one of them was like a 12-minute opus, and it was amazing. Yeah. And shortly thereafter,
they broke up,
turned into a bunch of different other bands who were, I like them all, but it's not the same.
Yeah, no.
So I was fortunate enough to get to see these guys.
Nice. Yeah, saw them live.
I saw them live a couple times. Postman Syndrome, definitely... definitely up there for me, for one of the best concert experiences I had to throw in there. All right, so what's your next one? What do you got?
All right, well, the next show, it's now it's starting to get really metal.
Oh, okay, guys, watch out. Up and Hill.
I don't even remember what year it was, or if it was the first or second time that I got to see Mastodon opening for people at the Social.
Right.
This is the song we're listening to, or we will be listening to here momentarily, is Mastodon, March of the Fire Ants. It's really metal. But they weren't even the headliner. They were, it was a Dillinger Escape Plan show.
Yes.
So it was Dillinger Escape Plan, Mastodon, and Norma Jean at the Social.
That was one of the ones where I contemplated, well, like that was almost my number 5.
Yeah. Well, dude, it was so good. It was a lot of metal. It was a lot of good metal.
It was
in a very tight little area. I mean,
sold out too. Social.
Oh, completely sold
out.
And everyone was told beforehand, like, some people knew that they'd been blowing fire on stage. Dillinger Escape Plan had been blowing fire.
Well, the thing was that
on this tour.
Yeah, Dillinger, they were known for blowing fire during a certain song, but then that singer left the band. They got a new singer. So the whole thing was, are they going to blow fire? Are they going to do it? Are they going to do it? And they really weren't doing it that much. And then they started bringing it back.
And then at the same time, everyone was told specifically that there would be no fire breathing at the Social.
Oh, yeah. Because the place is so small.
It's so tiny.
I bet you they told the band that you're not going to do this. They were like, you know what? We weren't, but now we are.
No, you're probably right. Because, like, and whenever the song started, that motherfucker took out his torch and started blowing fire in the town.
I felt the heat.
I was all the way at the back of the bar, right next to you.
Yeah.
You were sitting, I could feel the heat from the fireballs on my face.
It was crazy.
It was so insane.
Yeah.
And, you know, just seeing, you know, this power band that Mastodon has become. I mean, they were just as good back then. They just didn't have the credibility, I guess.
They just had the one album. I think they were still touring on Leviathan.
Oh, no, this was Remission. They were touring on Remission.
Leviathan's one after. Yes. Yeah.
They were touring on Remission. It was so much metal, and it was so loud. I'm pretty sure my ears rang for like 5 days afterwards. And at the end of the show, I was just like, what just happened? Like, there was a lot of metal and a lot of drinking. I think somebody blew fire inside this tiny club in Orlando.
I think that was not safe.
Totally not safe. And Mastodon was off the chain, as always. Mm-hmm. And they were just as good as when we saw them open for Clutch.
Yes.
Which was
another great show.
That was almost this one.
Almost interchangeable.
Yeah.
I have seen Dillinger, like... that's another thing. I've seen him so many times.
I really even don't even listen to Dillinger on a constant basis, and I think I've seen them like 4 or 5 times.
Yeah, so I've seen them like...
Because I've seen them at the Social a couple times. Mm-hmm. I think I saw them at the House of Blues, and I definitely saw them at Hard Rock as well. So that's at least four times I've seen them.
There you go. I've seen them like eight or nine, I think, at least.
All their shows are amazing.
They are all amazing, but that one at the social was
that's the standout. They were tight. Of all of them.
That was tight.
They were tight. All the light work was tight, yeah. And they blew fire in a tiny club.
And they blew fire in a tiny club. Mastodon Open. Norma Jean, who I was a big fan of them at that time, too. So yeah, that was a great show.
Yeah, it was
Billy D listened to that show outside the club because he didn't buy a ticket ahead of time.
Really? Poor Bill.
I remember him saying.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, he was standing outside the club listening to the band whenever they would open the door.
Poor Billy.
Hey, you gotta get your medal somehow.
Yeah, right? You do.
All right, so that great show.
So yeah, Dillinger Escape Plan, Mastodon, and Norma Jean. Man, when was that? Was probably like 2004, maybe
4-ish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
somewhere around there.
It was right before Dillinger put out a Miss Machine. So actually, it would probably have been the end of 2003.
Okay, well, there we go.
Mid to end of 2003. Because that was after they put out the Mike Patton split, but they weren't touring with Mike Patton, obviously. They were touring. But it was their new singer. It was my first time seeing them with the new singer, Greg Bucciato. I imagine that's how he pronounces his name. I don't think he does. But all right, so another. My number four is a dual concert. It's kind of like Postman, because I saw him twice and I lumped them together. This is a kind of a similar thing.
Okay.
All right. When I was grown up, Northeast area, Staten Island, Shaolin, 718, represent Wu Tang.
But what?
Park Hill, Ghost on Haunted Hill. I just sought to leave all that later. Around this time, late 90s, I was listening to a college radio station, 89.5 FM WSOU. That was Seton Hall University in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. It was their college radio station. And for years, it was a metal station. Like, it was run by the students, and I don't know, whoever ran it was like, we're just going to play metal.
We're going to play metal because metal's awesome.
We're going to play metal because metal's awesome, and this is the Northeast, and we're all angry up here, so this is what we're going to do. So I learned about a lot of awesome, awesome bands through listening to this radio station. It was great. Right around the time when I left that area, 2000-ish, they switched formats to not... It was weird, like to slightly less metal. It was kind of strange.
Okay.
But it just wasn't as good.
Yeah.
But before they switched, they were doing these shows called the SSSOU.
Okay.
And it's like the SS Crespedisa, right? And they would rent out a boat. It would... go around Manhattan on the Hudson, and they would put bands on the boat and just play out there in the water. And it was
it's like a cruise concert.
It's like a cruise concert, but we didn't really go anywhere. We just went around Manhattan at night for a few hours while some bands crushed our skulls with music,
melted your face.
The first one I went to was SSSOU 2, which the headliner was I don't know, they weren't headlining, but there was a band called Kilgore I was really into at the time. Named after, Kilgore Trout.
Uh-huh.
And they were really cool. Another band called Crisis, a New York hardcore band with a chick singer called Karen Crisis. And she had these really long, blonde dreadlocks. Hey,
Karen Crisis sounds like Chris Crimson.
Chris Crimson and Karen Crisis. Karen Crisis. But they were really cool. And then the headliner was... Anyway, the SSSOU 3 featured another band I've talked about in the past. Go ahead and start their song right here because it's a short song. E-Town Concrete opened up.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, they were the first band to play on the SSSOU 3, the first or second. And they were awesome, as they always were, because I've seen them. Another band I've seen four or five times. Headlining that show was Incubus.
Oh, nice.
Yes, right.
So that was that
like maybe
in between Science and Make Yourself, probably?
No, it was literally months before Make Yourself came out.
Okay,
They definitely played like, here's a new song off our new album coming out. And they definitely played whatever the single was at the time.
Oh, probably Pardon Me.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what they played. But it was mostly stuff off of Science,
which is a great album.
And it was super intense. If you've never seen a full-blown mosh pit on a boat, then I don't know what to say, man.
That's so weird. You say a mosh pit and an Incubus show, and if you think of those two things today, people are like, excuse me, what the hell are you talking about?
That wouldn't make any sense. But off of Science, that was a heavy rocking album. Well, and then when you see him live, it was like even more intense.
There was a decent part of Make Yourself that was pretty heavy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. Not the songs that were singles, but...
No.
But E-Town Concrete... They're so good. This song's off their first album, Fort of Fame, which came out in 1998.
Wow. You're an old man.
God, yeah, this is
old man Crespo.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Get out your walking stick.
Oh, I got man. Where's my?
I don't know. Where's your walking stick?
Walking stick somewhere. I'm not gonna be able to walk without it. Yeah, incredible show. And then, like, you know, it was just an awesome experience because I was on a boat.
Yeah.
You know, what the hell? I haven't been on a show like that before or since. I haven't even seen one available like that other than, like, you know, Weezer Cruise, Kiss Cruise, yeah. Crap like that, you know? I mean,
those are big bands.
Those are big bands. Those are giant cruises that are actual cruises, multi-day cruises, yeah. Or other things than to see the band. This is just you get on a boat with
the
band
and you get off.
Like, the first one I went on, the boat was even smaller. It was smaller than the second boat, yeah. That I was on. So for the first band, for Crisis, I was like I am right here,
yeah.
Right? You see where you are?
Yes.
That's the band.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we were there, man. It was like...
You might as well have been in the high school gym.
Oh, it was awesome, except we were on a tiny boat on the Hudson. So that was awesome. That was great. Good times in
pretty
the 90s.
Pretty sweet, dude. All
right, so...
it's a good idea. We should do it here.
An SS Crespo Disso music tour?
Yes.
All right, we'll play... we can play Rock Band for everyone.
Yes. Acoustic.
We'll play Acoustic Rock Band
for
everyone.
We'll play an acoustic set.
We'll play an acoustic set for you guys. All right. What is your number three?
All right. This is System of a Down show I went to.
Nice.
All right. So it was supposed to be System of a Down headlining. The Mars Volta was going to be number two,
uh-huh.
And then it was Down and somebody that I don't remember, because they weren't very good.
Right.
But the guy from Mars Volta, Jeremy Michael Ward,
that dude who did like the electronic stuff, who was off to the side.
That was the tour he died on, and he died at he overdosed in the city prior to Orlando.
Nice.
So it was the first cancellation of Mars Volta as part of that tour.
Ah.
So I show up, and they're like, the Mars Volta isn't playing here, but Michael Ward died. And I'm just sitting there going,
you didn't even have any...
What the hell's going on?
No forewarning.
No, there was zero. He died like 2 days before.
But even then, with Mars Volta... having to cancel.
Well, okay, because the Mars Volta had to cancel, Down put an extended set, and so did System.
Oh, okay.
So I got crappy band, and then a really long Down concert, and then a really long System concert.
Wow.
Dude, they played for almost 3 hours. System played for almost 3 hours.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
At that time, I didn't even know they had 3 hours worth of music.
Dude, they played a lot of old stuff, and a lot of the stuff that they were just kind of messing around, like the Zelda song that you always hear.
They
played that shit live, bro.
I remember that.
Because they had to kill time.
Because they had to.
They had an extra, you know, an extra half concert to fill.
That does make for a unique concert experience.
And they make, and all their songs are really short. I mean, the song we're listening to, War, is probably almost over.
It is almost over. We got about 30 seconds left in it.
Exactly.
And we just started listening to it.
Yeah. So,
I remember when this album came out, the first album,
yeah.
And that one, that it blew my mind.
Well, you see,
it was like nothing, because the thing was, it was played on the radio.
Well, see, and that was the great thing. People were listening, regular rock and roll people were listening to System of a Down, not knowing they were listening to metal.
Yeah, that's true.
They had no idea that they were listening to the freaking horns,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, because it was on a lot of rock stations. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Man, it was so fantastic. But no, I mean, the show, I mean, I wasn't even on the floor. I had seats. A couple of Matty J was there.
Mm-hmm.
So was Mr. Miliano, both friends of the show.
Oh yeah, noted author, published author Matthew Miliano.
Exactly. They rushed the floor, so they were on the floor for System.
Right.
I was up in the seats,
like a good boy.
And Phil when Down was playing,
Phil Anselmo
during the middle of one of the sets, he's just like, what's up, everybody? Started talking about the concert experience. He's like, mm-hmm. whenever I enjoyed going to concert, I would always sit in the seats, man. I always loved the seats. You want to know why? Because that's where everybody's getting high. And as soon as he said that, I was hitting a joint.
Oh,
and I was
Drew.
Like, Phil, you are reading my mind, bro. That is why I'm in the seats, because there is no security up here, and all I smell is reefer.
That's funny.
So, oh, man, System, that they tore the roof off the place.
Yeah, I'm sure they did. They're tight.
It was so metal. And like I said, they played a lot of weird stuff because they had time to kill.
Yeah.
You know, I got to hear the Zelda song. I'm pretty sure they did a couple covers of weird stuff.
So to fill the time.
Yeah, so it was a really good show.
That makes me think of tangent, talking about unique concert experience because they had to adjust on the fly because of a band canceling. I saw the Misfits once.
Yeah.
House of Blues, 01, 02, and they were the headliner of like a 5-band bill, like a crazy long bill that Dillinger might have played that show. Did they? They might have. They might have opened. It was weird. It was like them, but Murphy's Law. See, no, it wasn't. No, because Dillinger was another. I'm thinking of another Dillinger show. It was Murphy's Law, Hot Water Music, Circle Jerks, and then might have been one other band, and Misfits headlined, right?
Weird.
Yeah. It was, you know, it was a punk rock show, and Hot Water Music threw everything off, but, you know, the girls dig it, so whatever. Made them dance for a little while. About half an hour into the Misfits set, definitely not the end of the set, half an hour into it, the guitar player, he's playing, and he like he just stops in the middle of the song, and he walks off stage while the rest of the band plays. And the song finishes, Jerry Only, the bassist guy, he's like talking to the crowd on the mic. And then I can see, because I'm up on the top in the balcony, I can see the guitarist come off, he's on the side of the stage. And he's yelling something out to the drummer. And then the drummer's like, and then he walks off. And the drummer leaves. And then the other guitar player, then the singer, Michael Graves, he's like, he saw that they left and he left. All three of them just left. And then Jerry Only's up there and he's like, I don't know what's going on with my guys, but I got at least one more song for you. So here we go. This is We Are 138. And then he played We Are 138 by himself on the bass. We Are 138. And everyone was singing along. It was super intense. He might have played one more song. And then he was like, sorry, guys. I don't know what happened. I'm going to find out later. I think that was the last time they toured with Michael Graves. I think he quit after that. I don't know what happened at that show, though.
Yeah, but something weird.
But then Jerry Only, like, he jumped into the crowd, and then he hung out with all the fans and was, like, trying to make up for it and everything. So, you know, he was a classy gentleman all the way, for sure.
At least he did his part.
Yeah, he did his part. So, but it was cool, though, hearing a couple of Jerry Only by himself. Like, yeah. I'd go see Jerry Only by himself now, you know. I see a solo act. Anyway, okay, and then another. This brings me to my number three. This one was definitely freaking random, and I didn't even remember it. I had to think for a while, and then it popped into my head. I was like, oh, yeah, this was so fucking incredible. How can I not talk about this? 99, Rage Against the Machine, Battle of Los Angeles, drops, right?
Yes.
They, to promote the album, well, first off, they were doing a show in New York City at the Roseland Ballroom. Mm-hmm. Roseland Ballroom is literally across the street from the Ed Sullivan Theater.
Okay.
Ed Sullivan Theater is where David Letterman records, films the show. So, to promote Battle of Los Angeles, they got booked on David Letterman, but of course, they won't just go into the studio and do a song because of Rage Against the Machine. So they set up a stage on the side street. This is like right off Times Square, too, because it's at Sullivan Theater. They set up a stage on side street between the theater and the Roseland, and it was just free show. Come see Rage play for free. And you bet your ass, me and my friends, we left school early. We jumped on a bus to the train, to the ferry, to fucking Manhattan.
Yep.
And we saw Rage Against the Machine for free in the rain.
It's like, what's going on right now? It makes no difference why, because I have to get there.
We watched the show, the whole set in the rain. They played four songs. They started with this one, Testify. Do you remember this one?
Yes.
They started with Testify. They played Guerrilla Radio. And then they definitely played a couple songs off of... They played Killing in the Name.
Oh, nice.
At one point, which is like, you know, they're huge. Yeah. That was their break single, right? They played Killing in the Name. Okay. It's Rage, man. It's the 90s. It's Rage. It's like the angriest music at the time, you know, especially for pop culture.
Well, yeah.
Still now, I listen, like, I was listening to some Rage yesterday, and I was getting pissed off. I was like, yeah, man, fuck the system. Fuck the goddamn system, dude. This is bullshit.
It is.
Free Mumin Abdul-Jamal.
Damn straight.
So, it's like the third song and the fourth song. First off, when you get there, everything's barricaded because obviously it's a free show. They're expecting a lot of people. There's a lot of barricades, a lot of police there. And they have people roped off. And I was like all the way towards the back. A few of my friends managed to get up towards the middle of the street, but they were stopped by a barricade.
Yeah.
When the band starts playing, everyone all up and down the block just starts freaking out and rocking out and jumping up and down and going crazy. My friends, one of them was up on the guardrail, and they were... Like the police were right there, like on the other side of the guardrail, as you know, security or whatever. And of course, they're playing "Killing in the Name."
Yeah.
And there's a part where they go, "Fuck you! I won't do what you tell me, dude." I don't know how those cops didn't just start whipping up batons and beating people in the face because they had fingers in their face. Like, "Fuck you! Yeah. I won't do what you tell me." It was awesome, man. It was so cool. God, I I would love to relive that. I would love to relive that afternoon again. That afternoon, evening. Seeing Rage Against the Machine for free in Manhattan.
No.
Just off Times Square. Like, 98. With a bunch of my best friends too. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah. Great times.
Fantastic.
And then that makes me think of the one show that I missed that I was trying to go to. I didn't have tickets yet, but then it didn't matter. Summer 2000, huge tour, Rage Against the Machine, Beastie Boys, and someone else like incredible.
Yeah.
Like one of my favorites at the time, right? Dying to go to that show. We're talking about all these shows we've been to at clubs. This was going to be at a giant stadium.
Oh.
Yeah. Massive. Like a Metallica show, right? Fucking show.
Huge.
About a month before that show, which was like right at the beginning of the tour because, you know, Beastie Boys, New York group, and, you know, good old Michael Diamond, who loves to roll around Manhattan on his bicycle. Hit a pothole, broke his arm.
Oh.
They had to postpone the tour.
Oh.
I moved. Actually, I don't even think they ever did that tour.
No.
And
that was the end of that?
That was the end of that one. Oh, well.
That would have been an awesome concert.
Yeah, it would have been one of the best. Beastie Boys. That's one I've never seen. Never will now.
R.I.P.
Yeah, Adam Yaut. All right, so we're at number two. All right, awesome. What's your number two?
Number two ish. This is actually
the
most I've seen. All right, so it's silly as hell.
Mm-hmm.
It's totally like the most metal thing you'll ever see in your life.
Totes metal.
Every time I see it, it's really funny because all the bands that open for these guys, mm-hmm. even when they open for them, they're headlining acts.
Yeah, they usually are headliners.
Like,
yeah.
These guys are headliners, and they're opening for a fucking cartoon. I am talking about
the
Death
Gorillas.
Clock.
Oh, Death Clock. Yes,
yes.
Death Clock. Yeah, yeah.
I've seen Death Clock twice. I think you were at the first show.
Yeah,
you saw Death Clock, and then you didn't go to the one with.
I did not go to the most recent one.
Yeah, the most recent one definitely stands out to me more. Only just because. One of the opening acts was the Black Dahlia Murder. I yet to see them. And that's actually the song I'm playing. This is Dave Goes to Hollywood off the album Miasma. Dude, Death Clock is awesome.
Yes.
No doubt. Amazing.
Yeah, very metal.
So freaking metal. And
also kind of funny.
There's a really funny, and they play cartoons.
Yeah, and they play the cartoon videos
yeah,
and stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, like, because, but, man, the opening bands are always so good. And like I said, Black Dahlia Murder, these guys were the first band. I actually came in. I missed, like, two of their songs. But, it's just a bunch of fat. I walked in, and I just see this big, fat dude with this giant, ugly tattoo on his belly. He's not wearing a shirt, not
Gross.
Wearing any shoes. He's
Gross.
Wearing, like, cut-off shorts. Screaming into this microphone, right? And then, like, during the breakdown, he just puts it to the side, smiles, and starts like he's conducting an orchestra.
Oh.
And all the kids are just eating it up. And it's the biggest freaking mosh pit right in the middle of that freaking House of Blues.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was amazing. I have never seen a happier group of fat, sweaty metal dudes in my life.
The first time we saw Death Clock was at Hard Rock.
Yes.
And there's no mosh pitting at Hard Rock.
No, there is no mosh pitting at Hard Rock. Mm. House of Blues, they say no mosh pitting, but they do.
If there's too many people, they can't stop
there's
it. If there's a couple people doing it, the yellow shirt guys will pull you out.
Right? Yeah, no.
If a circle pit breaks out, they're going to stand off to the side
exactly.
and wait for it to
die. Exactly. And it was Black Dahlia Murders, so the circle pit broke out. And the dudes were just kind of sitting there making sure no one got their head scratched or, you know, crushed in. Because,
they didn't get beat up.
No. And there were definitely some dudes who could have beat the shit out of those security guards.
There always are. There are always those guys.
But now it was so metal. And I love Miasma so much. I can listen to that album front to back for like the next week straight if I wanted to.
It is a really good album.
So, you know, finally being able to see the Black Dahlia Murder live was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I think Machine Head was there. I've never liked them live.
I even liked Machine Head growing up.
Yeah.
Their first couple albums, actually their first album's still really good. Yeah, but I saw him live once, and I was like, yeah.
Well, and you see, and how, I mean, we saw him live at that the Lamb of God show.
The Lamb of God Gojira show. Oh, they were sandwiched between Gojira and Lamb of God, and that's not a good look for Machine Head.
No, no, no. And you know what? I mean, Lamb of God, they rocked that show. It was really good.
Yeah, but the sound mix wasn't too hot, though.
No.
I remember being muddled.
And also, I remember Gojira being heavier and more metal than anything I'd ever heard in my life.
Yeah, that was definitely, the heaviest show I've ever been to. And the heaviest set I've ever seen was Gojira.
And I remember thinking to myself, who in their right mind will let this band open for them?
Right.
Yeah, because they just stole the show.
They just blew everyone away. These French guys blew everyone away.
Yeah, I mean, oh, man.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen Cannibal Corpse. I've seen Morbid Angel. That Gojira set was like...
No, that was... Yeah,
I'm surprised it was at Janus Landing. I'm surprised the buildings didn't crumble around us.
Old Janus Landing, too. That was before they revamped it.
Oh, they revamped it?
Oh, dude, it's open again.
It was closed?
They
I don't live in St. Pete.
They closed Janus Landing for like 3 years.
Oh, yeah.
And they reopened it. And now it's got like stadium... Now where it was, they've got like... They built into those buildings.
Yeah.
So there's like leather couches and like... platforms, so you can like sit down on a leather couch while you watch the show.
Wow,
it's weird.
I remember thinking, because where it is, there are definitely like people living in those buildings.
Yes,
man, it sucks.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, unless you're into metal,
even then, like, what if I had a really long day at work? Really long day at work. I'm like, man, this sucks. I got a headache. I just want to go home and relax.
Here's Gojira.
I can't even watch my my tunes, man.
Yeah, but no, those. Those Death Clock shows are always fun. I mean, if you're into cartoons and metal, I highly recommend seeing. Mm-hmm. I've seen them every time. They've toured twice that I know of. I've seen them both tours. Mm-hmm. It's not a show that I'm going to miss again.
No. All right. There you go. Drew Secogren recommends Death Clock Live.
I mean, hell, the first time we saw them, didn't Killswitch open for them?
Was it Killswitch? I don't think it was Killswitch. I don't think I've ever seen Killswitch.
I saw Killswitch.
Did you?
With Miliano.
There you go.
Because he was, I mean... Before I went to metal shows with you, I used to go to metal shows with Matt.
Yeah, Matt covers a lot of ground there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he knows what's up. All right, we're continuing with the metal and the hard rock live. And a lot of things we're talking about, actually. This was a show at Hard Rock Live. I don't know if the no moshing policy was instituted at this point, because we're talking 2001.
Yeah, they did that later.
Yeah, so... oh, man. Yeah. Morbid Angel. Mm-hmm. I mentioned seeing Morbid Angel. They were one of the openers at this show. Okay. Also opening was Soulfly.
Okay.
And one other band who I can't remember at the moment.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't matter. Because those bands were good enough.
Yes.
They were cool. And I really like Soulfly, so it was actually really cool getting to see them live at the Hard Rock, which is, no matter what you want to say about the way they run the place in terms of...
Always great sound.
The best sound in town, I think. I mean, even at House of Blues, there's some times where I'm like, it's a little muddled tonight, guys. At Hard Rock, it's always been fucking pristine.
Yeah.
These guys were all opening on the Reinventing the Steel tour.
Oh, that's all you had to say.
For Pantera. Let me just go ahead and start this song. I'm going to start with the song that they started the show with, their set with.
All you have to say is Reinventing the Steel.
Reinventing.
Yes.
It was the Reinventing the Steel tour. Here we go. The song Hellbound. Okay.
Awesome.
I'm going to turn this up just a little bit there.
Love me some Pantera.
All right, so imagine this. And this is after waiting like an hour and a half between bands, between the second to last band and Pantera. It took them forever to get set up, but then once the curtains opened, it didn't matter anymore. Yeah. Double stack amps on stage, like maybe five on each side, and they're, I don't know, 25 feet tall and encased in stainless steel.
Yeah.
Like the giant, giant stainless steel amps on the stage, facing the stage with the drum riser in the middle and Vinnie Paul's drums in the middle of that gigantic... made out of metal Pantera sign hanging behind the band. Okay, band comes out. They start playing. It's like super, super loud, super crazy. And then the chorus kicks in right here. Right here. Fire! Fire shoots! Fire shooting out of the speakers. Fire shooting out of the Pantera sign. There's fire on that. There's fire everywhere during this part. And when they did that, The place, like, people were already cheering and like screaming and everything. When the fire shot out that first time, everyone in Hard Rock
lost their minds,
dude. And the place was packed. And everyone flipped out. And they were so tight. They were so good. They played like a 2-hour set. at least 2 hour sets. Yeah. They were known for doing that. Mm-hmm. Dimebag Darrell, you know, rest in peace. Oh, like, man. Truly rest in peace, yes. Bro. Dimebag was like, you could just watch him alone. He was having the best time ever.
Yeah.
You know, just the crazy faces he was making. Like, the guy is so drunk, but he still sounded so,
so
great.
So wasted out of his, completely gone. But like, not even on this planet wasted and just shredded.
Yeah, his guitar skills must have been, like, all just muscle memory by that point because, incredible. Amazingly tight. They played songs that it was the only time I ever saw them, and they played songs I really wanted to hear. It was like one of those perfect moments. Yes, they played Slaughtered. I didn't think they would play Slaughtered. They played fucking Slaughtered. They played all these other songs where it was they'll play one song, but then they would stop halfway through and then start playing another song, and then the ending of that song will be the end from a third song. It's like, holy shit, they just covered like half of an album, and that was epic. And it was awesome. I loved it. At one point during their set, when they did Walk. Yeah, because that's a big one.
Oh, yeah.
When
they Walk's a huge one.
When they did Walk, from Biohazard, Evan from Biohazard, the singer, he just popped up. He was hanging out, and he came up out on stage, and he did Walk with them. I think Max Cavalera from Soulfly, he came out too, and they were singing Walk with the band, and that was their either last or second to last show for Reinventing the Steel Tour. They may have done a handful of live shows after that one, and then they broke up.
Yep.
So it was one of the last times they played. And then I remember talking to this dude who was a massive, massive Pantera fan. I remember talking to him a couple weeks later. He was at that show, and he was like, dude, that was the fourth or fifth time I've seen him. By far the best. By far.
Yeah.
And I was like, yes, I saw one of their best.
Yes.
Great. Oh, it made me so happy. So, so happy. So, yes, Pantera Reinventing the Steel Tour.
That is a band that I wish I would have seen.
Oh, man. Pretty much my favorite band of all time, and for sure, my number two favorite concert experience. Like, the other three, you ask me tomorrow, they may be different, you know? But number one and number two are always going to be the same. Before we do our number ones, do you have any other concerts that you want to, like, your honorable mentions?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'm going to, one of the honorable mentions I'm not going to mention. But yes, I went to a Radiohead show in St. Pete at the,
I missed that one.
Big outdoor one they have out there.
That was, that was like the Kid Amnesiac tour or something.
Yeah, it was, no, it was the,
was after Amnesiac, the rainbow one.
Yeah, it was the rainbow tour, whatever that was.
Yeah.
And I really, it was good.
Too much electronic noodling stuff.
Exactly. They were really pushing the rainbows thing.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to hear the good stuff.
Yeah.
just play the bends. Hey, just play the bends back to front and I'll be happy.
Oh, that would be awesome.
But that's never going to happen.
Bends is so good.
That's another one of those albums that you can just listen to. Just put it in, hit play, and you'll know it's over because you're hearing another song twice. You're like, oh
I
know
what?
Fuck, we'll just play it again.
Yep. Just let it go.
Yep. I went to Summer Sanitarium tour, Metallica. This was post Jason, so it was with the new guy,
the Robert Trujillo.
Yes,
who was for a little while. Man. He was Ozzy's bassist in the 90s.
Yeah. Let's see here. The opening for them.
Yes.
Fat Lazy Chino and the Deftones.
Oh.
This was not good Deftones. This was Fat Lazy Chino.
Deftones is one of those ones where either you're gonna get them on a good night or you're gonna get them on a shit night.
It was a shit night.
Oh, that sucks.
So the Deftones sucked. And then it was Mudvayne, and they only had like one song that I wanted to hear.
Yeah.
And then it was Linkin Park, who I was actually really into that first album they did.
Uh-huh.
And then I saw them live and I was like, what is this garbage?
this
is like the worst thing I've ever seen in my life.
I saw,
like, this song is good, but the way I'm hearing it right now, I do not like this.
I saw Linkin Park once before anyone knew who they really were.
Yeah.
They were like the opener of a four band bill for POD.
Okay. Yeah.
That was POD, Head PE, some band called like Project 86. They played in front of, like, it was Linkin Park and then Project 86. Linkin Park's the band that blew up.
Yeah.
No one ever heard of this Project 86 band anymore. I don't even think that's the right name. I could have just been making that up. But, you know, that says a lot about Linkin Park. But they weren't good, though.
It was not good.
It sounds like a lot of shit before Metallica.
And then, even worse. Even worse. The worst of it all. Limp Bizkit, but it was without Wes. They didn't even have Wes. So I wasn't even like, Limp Bizkit is terrible.
You don't even have the guy in the crazy bear outfit.
Exactly.
With the face paint.
All I wanted to see is crazy bear face paint, crazy, and him just doing his weird ass guitar. Because, I mean, say what you want to say about Limp Bizkit. Uh-huh. Their first album I was into, it was, you know, it was during the Korn times and the Limp Bizkits and the.
That for the $3 bill, y'all.
Yeah,
$3 bill, y'all, is a decent album. It's still, I think it still holds up.
Their second album, Significant Other.
The one is that the
no.
Second album is the one with the one that blew up,
but it has Significant Other
the one
on
with
it.
Faith,
yeah,
right.
No, Faith is on $3 bill.
You gotta have faith.
Faith is on $3
bill. So was the album? Was there an album before $3 bill, y'all? Wasn't there one before that? That was their first album.
Yes, that was their first album. It had Counterfeit and Faith on it.
Counterfeit.
Those are the two singles.
Right, right. Okay, yeah. And you know what? Yeah, I stand by that. I still think that album, for the most part, it still holds up to this day.
Yeah, but like I said, say what you want to say about Limp Bizkit. Wes Borland is a fucking...
He knows what's up.
He knows what's up. That motherfucker is eccentric as hell, and he can play the shit out of a guitar.
Yes, he can.
But he wasn't even there. So I had to wait... I had to sit through 6 hours of crap before... Metallica melted my face for 3 straight hours.
Damn, but it's Metallica, though. Old Metallica is still Metallica.
Well, you see, and that's just it. And the great thing was, like, I was afraid because this was, they were touring for St. Anger.
Oof, that fuck that album.
Exactly.
That's the one where they made Lars's drum sound like an empty keg.
Yes. So I really wasn't looking forward to that part of the show.
To play the new stuff, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I wasn't looking forward to the new stuff. But, dude, they did all the old stuff.
Yeah, like you said, the 3-hour set. That's what they're known for. They've been known to do that since the 90s.
Blackened.
No, since the 80s.
Blackened and Justice for All. Orion. Yep. I mean, they hit every note. And oh, God. Oh,
and then of
God.
Course, it's a huge stage with
a huge,
fireworks and things.
Yeah, all
did they do the collapsing stage finale? And because they've been doing that for years.
No, they didn't.
They didn't do the collapsing stage. When they have room to do that, they do the collapsing stage.
But in the middle of Blackened, mm-hmm. the snake pit.
Yeah, right? Their little pit that they have. Yeah,
It is specific to Metallica shows
because it's in the middle of the stage, sort of, okay. Right? Like they can go around it, the band, sort of.
Well, no, because the way the snake pit works is they're on stage, and normally, they'll just be like a giant circle pit in the middle at the metal show, you know, right in front of the stage.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
well, the way it works is there's a small circle pit. And another small circle pit, and there's this giant figure eight of madness running through it.
That's ridiculous.
And that shit opened, literally, it opened up in front of me. Like, I'm sitting there, Blackened's going, I'm closing my eyes, putting my horns up, doing my thing, and I open my eyes again, and there is like 500 people beating the shit out of each other, no more than 3 feet in front of me. And I just kind of step back.
That's how it would be. more than one, so it's just mind my own business, watching the metal show, pit opens up like right in front of me. Whoa, I'm not ready for this.
No, exactly.
I got a beer.
So I kind of took a step back, but man, they hit it. They hit every note, and they were on point. And
awesome.
It was, oh God, it was amazing. Just watching those guys play.
Too bad they didn't have better openers. Could have made your top five.
Oh, definitely.
You know?
But I mean, yeah.
But they had to sit through so much shit, though. It was an endurance test. It was like a reward.
Yeah, exactly. I just had to sit there and wait and wait and wait for Metallica to finally play.
We'll just see this. Those Metallicas.
Also,
those Metallicas.
The only ska show I've ever been to. I don't remember any. The only band I remember is Real Big Fish.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there were plenty of openers. It was a ska show. The ska shows are like punk shows. It's a bunch of short sets.
Yeah,
whole bunch of bands.
You want to see the Scatolites for 10 minutes? Here you go.
Exactly.
A little bit of Mephiscopheles.
So
another band with the word ska
underneath. But Real Big Fish player, they played Take On Me. It was awesome. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, Take On Me. Yeah, that's cool.
And then all the Minus the Bear shows that I've been to.
So many of them. I've been to a few.
I couldn't tell you how many Minus the Bear shows I've been to.
That's how I feel with Dillinger. It's impossible.
I mean, I started on their first... I found them on their pretty much their first album, for all intents and purposes,
mm-hmm.
and I went to that tour. And, I mean, ever since, it's just like, that was a great show. I'm going to see you again. And every time they come around, I just go.
Yeah. Yeah,
So, yeah. I mean, good Lord, I've seen Minus the Bear probably 12 times.
I believe that.
Easily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Always good shows. They always bring
it. They are always good. The thing is, you've seen them so many times, they all blend together.
Well,
so
yeah,
one,
no,
so one
exactly.
doesn't really stay out. Like, one but doesn't really stand out for me. I've seen them a bunch of times.
No, no. Well,
I've seen them two or three times at the Social. Saw them at the Firestone.
Because of the way that I've seen them, you know, and from their first album on,
you watch them progress.
Exactly, and they keep taking out the old stuff and putting in the new stuff. And
yeah.
You know, with each album, there are hits and whatnot, blah, 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 new classics.
Right.
The last time I saw them, I think they only played one song off Highly Refined Pirates, but it was the one I wanted. It was
play guitar in we're in a five guitar band.
Yes,
this song's awesome.
Every time,
that's where that ends.
That's how we all end, dude.
That's true.
But yeah, so and I mean, I've seen many other shows, but one of them kind of ties into your number one.
Okay, yeah.
So I'm not gonna
talk
about
that later. All right. And is that your honorables?
Yeah, those are my honorables. I hear your honorables.
All right. Yeah, I'll do mine real quick, and then we'll get to our tops. Orlando Calling 2011 was sick. Sick. And it was one of the few things I got, like, bonus perks from my time on Real Radio 104.1, as you know, being on SBK Live.
Mm-hmm.
Orlando Calling was a two-day festival, November 2011. And I hit up Matt. I was like, yo, Matt, what's up? What's up, Cabin? Give me some of those. Give me those Orlando Calling tickets, bro. $75 each. They were face value. Got me two tickets for the Saturday show. He's like, "What day do you want?" Saturday. Boom. Saturday. I went there with a good old Matty J. And oh man, the reason it was so good is because I saw so many bands.
Yeah.
Got to check off a lot of stuff on the list. Kid Cudi was the first one I saw. The start of the day, like 2 p.m. was Kid Cudi. I was like, "All right, this is
a good start."
And he did the Snoop Dogg thing where he had like a full rock band on stage with him. But I only saw like 10 minutes of that set because he started late and then we hightailed it so he could go see Iron and Wine.
Nice.
Iron and Wine is one dude playing guitar.
Yep.
He had a full band, like a 15-piece band with a horn section and backup singers. It was ridiculous. Matty J was actually pissed off. He's like, "What the fuck is
this?"
I'm
sure he did, because he just wanted to see dude with guitar.
He wanted to see dude with guitar. It was a full band. It's like, "This sucks, man." I was like, "Actually, yeah, I think this is really cool." Anyway, so we saw like about 15 minutes of that set. And then from that point on, I was just wandering around. Ended up seeing a little bit of Pete Yorn. I don't even like Pete Yorn, but you know what? Pete Yorn is playing there. I'm gonna go to the tent and go check out some Pete Yorn right now because he's playing right there. And I saw a couple songs, check out some hipsters. Speaking of like ska punk, I saw Less Than Jake.
No, yeah, man. I couldn't, man. That Less Than Jake is a Florida band.
Yeah.
So
you've seen a bunch of times. They've been around.
I could not. I used to go to a lot of punk shows when I was, you know, back in the day. And mm-hmm. I've seen Less Than Jake and Blink 182 more times than I care to recall.
Mm. Well, I don't know about Blink 182, but that Less Than Jake set, I saw the second half of their set. It was tight.
Yeah.
They're good.
No, they
I mean, they've been around for a while.
Yeah,
so.
They've been around forever.
So they know what they're doing at this point. Who else did I see at that day? Probably my favorite set of the day. Nah, it's a tie for my favorite set because I didn't get to see one entire set, so it can't really be my favorite. But I saw most of the Roots.
Oh, nice.
Oh, God, the
I'm
Roots.
I'm sure that's amazing.
Oh, they're so good. I mean, I was just mouth open the whole time. Like, how are these guys so good? How are they switching it up so often?
Yeah.
And just doing whatever. They're up there just doing whatever the fuck they want, and it's amazing. The Pixies.
Ooh.
Played all of Doolittle from front to back.
Nice.
And it was, man, that was good. And then for that one, we had seat tickets at the Citrus Bowl, but there was like no one there. I mean, relatively speaking, there were like 20,000 people there, but 70,000 person venue.
There.
It looks like no one's there, right? So we got down to the floor, and we were on the floor for the Pixies for that set, which was great. The Abbott Brothers, they were really good. The Raconteurs.
Yeah.
I don't even listen to their music, but it's fucking Jack White.
No.
How am I not going to go see Jack White?
Yeah,
right?
I mean, he's a talented motherfucker.
He's amazing. So I went and I saw Raconteurs. They were really good. I saw that whole set. The night ended. I know I'm missing some bands here. The night ended with actually, I want to mention this too. A band called, they were called Le Bleur. Now
Le Bleur.
Le Bleur. Bastard Love Child of Rock and Roll.
Yes.
Now they're called Swim. They changed their name. So I think it's Swim, SWIMM, something like that. But they played a set on like the small stage. I was like a tiny stage set up in a parking lot, one of those stages.
Good stuff.
Oh, they were so good.
Yeah.
They blew my mind. And then the last set of the day for Saturday was a band I don't even like. I mean, I don't like them. The Killers.
Yeah.
It was a fucking good set, bro.
Yeah.
I mean, it was epic.
Oh,
it was epic music.
What was their song?
That song, you know, that song
which
you're thinking
one is
of.
It?
That's the one that they closed with, obviously. Yeah. And when they did that, it was like a lot of pyro on stage, like sparks were coming down behind them. And then at the end of the song, like crazy fireworks went off above them for like fucking was like a full on fireworks show for a few minutes there. So Orlando Calling 2011, totally boss. Not enough people showed up. They haven't done another one since.
I know.
Goddamn shame if you ask me. They should do more. All right, let me run through some of these. Red Cord and Horse the Band at the Social. I know you were there.
Oh, I was there. I was at that show. That was, yeah. Was that the first or the second time we saw Horse?
I think it was the second time we saw Horse. It was my first time seeing the Red Cord. The only time I saw the Red Cord. And that one sticks out because they're a super, like, really metal band. And the singer's like, ooh, like, really, really metal. But the whole time he's on stage, he's smiling ear to ear. Like, the hugest smile on his face. He's having the best time ever. And then while he's not singing, he's, like, nodding his head and, like, looking at the people. He's, like, smiling, yeah.
Like, the Horse. Dude, this exactly. Horse guys always have fun on stage.
Oh, yeah,
too.
But you can tell. But the music is fun music, though. It's like, no. You got the 8-bit Nintendo sound. Yep. And you got the guy that comes out in the pizza slice outfit.
Yeah.
And then the other guy that comes out hot dog off and he's playing the triangle and rocking out. Yeah, it's fun. And it matches the music. When the Red Cord guy is smiling like he's having the best time ever.
Like,
and the music like it's the most intense shit ever. They're playing Send the Death Storm. And then he's like, hey, how's it going?
Hey, how's it going?
That one stood out. Fall of Troy at the back booth.
Oh, I saw them
a few times, but at the back booth is the one.
I have that concert poster in my room.
There you go. Yeah, because it was such a good show.
Yeah.
I saw August Burns Red. That's the band that we use for the intro music.
The Machine Gun Guitars. That's how I know them.
I saw them at this place. I don't even know if it's still around, called the Oasis, and it's off of Forsyth, and it's like a shitty little.
No, yeah, it's still there. I don't think it's called the Oasis anymore.
Well,
it's
the worst little place ever. No stage. The band set up on the floor. There were about 30 people there tops. And this was before I had Thrill Seeker, but I went because I went with Johnny the Hater and another friend of ours, and they were into ABR, and they're like, you should listen to Thrill Seeker. And I was like, yeah, I'll get around to it. These guys started playing. 30 minutes later, fan for life.
Chris was like, I love it.
Like this is the worst setup ever for a band. And these guys came out and just killed it. It was me, John Hitter, and I can't think it was Billy White we were hanging out with. We were just hanging out to the side, drinking a beer, watching a show. Like, yeah, these guys are really good. And he was like, all of a sudden, like I looked to the left, I looked to the right, and he's gone. I'm like, where'd he go? And I look over, and he's in the pit, he's dancing it up. I'm like, whoa, what happened? And then he wanders back over a couple minutes later. He's like, yeah, I wasn't planning on doing that, but the music just took me. It just happened. The music took me. I was like, yeah, I respect that, bro.
Yeah,
I respect that. All right, at House of Blues, I saw it was one show, and it was like all my favorite bands at the time on one bill. We've been saying this a lot. I want to say one of them is Mastodon.
Well,
they might have opened.
That it happens sometimes.
This was like 2004-ish, 2003-ish. Every Time I Die.
Okay.
Zayo.
Okay.
And Dillinger Escape Plan was the headliner at House of Blues. And I don't think you were there. I don't think you were there, but it was
Yeah, no, because I've never seen Zayo.
Oh, Zayo. That was my first of two times seeing Zayo. At that point, I only knew a small part of their catalog. The gods were smiling on me that day, my friend, because almost all of Zayo's set I knew. I was like, yes. Every Time I Die, they were playing all my favorite songs. I was like, yes. Dillinger, they were tight. Such a good show. So worth my money.
I really like that Life and Death Are One.
Yeah, that song is that song's great. I'm going to skip this one because it ties into your number one. Smashing Pumpkins. My first big concert was Smashing Pumpkins. I'm going to sound like an old 80s dude. Smashing Pumpkins, Nassau Coliseum, Melancholy and Infinite Sadness Tour, bro. It was awesome. Yeah. But it actually was really good. Melancholy and Infinite Sadness Tour, it was like towards the end. It was like the last week of their tour.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, hour and a half, 2-hour set, something like that. They played all the hits. I was two of my friends. Man, can't remember how old I was at the time. Really young. Oh. It was my first really big concert, rock concert, and it was fucking Smashing Pumpkins.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And then I saw this show in Jersey, God Forbid, in Candiria, which is awesome because God Forbid's a Jersey band and Candiria's a Brooklyn band. It was like a homecoming thing, and the place was packed, and the music was awesome, and it just sounded great. And so there you go. Those are my honorable mentions. All right, Drew, let's get into your number one. I'm just going to go in and get this started.
All right, well, this is definitely, hands down, one of my favorite concerts of all time.
Me too. So, I mean, I almost put this in my top five, but you did it in yours, so I was like, I'm just going to piggyback on yours.
Yeah, I know. This is Between the Buried and Me. The name of the song is Informal Gluttony. It's the live version because I saw them live. You know, they were touring for Colors. And I loved the album. You know, I've been listening to it for weeks straight. And we knew they were touring for Colors. And we were like, man, I wonder how many songs they're going to play. What? How are they going to do this? Because yeah.
Because Colors is one. It's one song.
Pretty much.
It's one song split into eight tracks.
Exactly. So, is it the Social? Of all places. God, I fucking love that venue. It's Social, so good. So, you know, you got Between the Buried and Me at the Social. Yes. Sold out completely. And they just come out and they start playing the first song on Colors. And then they go into the second song. And by the time we get to hear the third song in Formal Gluttony, I'm sitting here going, they're just doing it.
They're doing
it. And they did. They just played it front to back. They just played Colors.
I'm pretty sure when they started playing this song, I was just yelling for a minute, they're doing it. Johnny the Hater was there. I was like, Johnny.
Yeah, exactly. They're doing it, man. Oh. And then at the end, I'm pretty sure they said, those were Colors.
Those were Colors. I think we may have made that part up. But it's fun. Yeah. Those were Colors. Caesar's Colors.
But, oh, man, it was so good. Yeah. I think it was like the third time I saw Between the Buried and Me, and by far it completely stood out.
That was
as
like
the show.
That was like my third or fourth time as well of like five or six.
Oh, yeah, no, I've seen them a couple times since.
Yeah, like the first time I saw them at Hard Rock Live, the sound was, you know, like they sound so tight. That was the show that turned Johnny the Hater onto Between the Buried and Me, because he was like, fuck these guys. And he saw them live at Hard Rock. He's like, that was amazing.
Because I saw them at the House of Blues a couple times.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I saw them there too.
And we saw them at the Beecham recently.
Saw them at Beecham with the Animals as Leaders, and the sound mix was all muddled on that one. It pissed me off. The Social, this Color show, sounded great. They were tight.
So amazing.
Small place, it was packed.
It was, oh man. And they just played the album from front to back.
Yeah.
And then, maybe a couple months later, they released the Colors live album. And it was
With a company, live DVD.
Exactly.
And it's like,
I was at that show.
It's amazing. Professional quality. Like, it looks great. It sounds great. I highly recommend Colors live show.
No, I actually prefer the live album to the studio album.
So do I. I listen to it more than the studio album.
It's
by far my favorite Between the Buried and Me output.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of all the stuff they put out since, it's good.
But it's not this. I mean, there's
that
no...
That makes me sad when,
out of
when
nowhere,
I see the band's
no
Apex.
Country breakdown, you know? Just...
the country breakdown. They try other things. They try other breakdowns, and it's just not as good.
No.
It's just not as good.
Yeah. Oh, man. That show, it was amazing. It blew my mind. At the end of it, I walked out, and I wasn't quite sure what had just happened.
Yeah.
You know, I was in some sort of weird daze of... massive serotonin and alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like, oh man.
And then I do remember after they played Colors, they did come out and play a two or three song
encore
from some other stuff, which
is cool. Awesome.
It's definitely. I did want to hear some of that older stuff too, guys. Colors is amazing. I'm so glad he did it. But I wanted to hear Mordecai also.
They gotta play Mordecai. They play it every time.
Every time they gotta play it. I mean, that's the only song you play off that album. You gotta play it. That's a bitchin'.
God, it was so good.
Bitchin' set, dude, for sure. I remember that one. Before I get into my number one, one more honorable that I wanted to mention, I forgot. Because you know what? It's the only, of all the shows you mentioned, it's the only hip hop show.
No, I've never been to a hip hop show.
You've never been to a hip hop show?
Nope.
I saw Del the Funky Homo Sapien on a Hieroglyphics tour back in 03, 04.
Sure,
they played,
good.
Of all places, The Social.
Yeah.
Sold out. And it was, dude, I mean, for even the hype man that came out, whoever the hype man was, that was a damn good hype man, bro. He got the crowd hyped.
Dude, it's Del and Hiro. Come on.
Yeah. But
when was this?
Who knows? What?
And when was this?
This was shortly after. It was a couple years after Gorillaz hit, and maybe a year after Deltron 3030.
So like 2004,
probably.
Like
2003, 2004. I went to that show with Juan Garcia de los Rios.
Oh, Juan Garcia de los Rios.
I mean, I had an amazing time before Del even hit the stage, which was at like 12:15 at night. I remember this one group that opened up was a duo from Atlanta called the Little Brother.
Mm-hmm.
No idea if they're still around or not. I remember it's two big fat black, and it looked like two Anthony Andersons up there.
Okay.
Really, okay. And I just remember their set was good. I didn't know any of their songs but I knew I liked them all. I was like, these guys are really good. They're really energizing the crowd. And at one point in the middle of the set, they just decided we're going to do a cover of Al Green's Let's Stay Together. Nice. And they had the whole, everyone in the social was singing along. The chorus, Let's Stay Together. We were all singing, you know. So by the end of that, we were all of us, and I mean like the crowd as well as the people on stage, we were all one. It was like we were family. It was one of the few times I've been to a show and I had such a sense of like unity and party amongst the people in the crowd, you know.
Yeah.
It was just fantastic. So that's definitely an honorable mention I wanted to throw out there. Best show I've ever been to, Drew. It's another bit of a little cheat because it's two shows, but there were two shows, the same band, same tour, back to back. It was
okay.
All right, so yeah, I'll just go ahead and why not just get this started? Because it's a long fucking song. Because I'm talking about Tool. The Lateralis Tour. What was it? You snapping at me, bro?
Sorry.
Snapping at me, bro? Come at me, bro.
Sorry, bro.
Tool, Lateralis Tour. Oh, three.
Okay, yeah.
About-ish, right?
I mean, that's actually, I didn't mention the Tool show that I went to, but the 10,000 Days Tour, because
yes.
I wanted to piggyback on yours.
Right, yes, 10,000 Days. That was
there
a
was
a,
that was that's the only, because they'd come before, and I missed them. And then when I found about that 10,000 Days Tour, I made sure I got in.
Got your ticket.
I got my ticket, I got in.
Yep.
And then, like, the last time they came around, they were... the tickets were on sale and sold out before I even knew they were coming.
They were, because they played at the UCF Arena. The CFE Arena? No, isn't the CFE, that's where Bright House, right?
That's
a football arena.
Okay.
The UCF Arena is where they play basketball and they have concerts.
Oh,
you're thinking
okay.
of the yeah. stadium. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But they play there. Like, what are you playing there for? You should be playing
Amway,
man. That's
where I saw them.
You start out every freaking time. But Lateralis, sorry. So Lateralis Tour. I saw what happened. What happened was, how did it go down? It was weird. Oh, you know what? We got our tickets. We're like, tickets go on sale at 10 a.m. I went over to a Ron B. Long Beach Englewood's place. Like, we're going.
Ron B. Long Beach Englewood.
And we're gonna totally play. We're gonna get 10 a.m. We're gonna go online. We're gonna get these tickets. We're going to this fucking show. And 10 a.m. rolled around. We busted our ass because, you know, refresh. The internet sucked. We're talking about, you know, 2003. It's a primitive age, man. It's practically the Stone Age. And we got our tickets, right? We got our tickets for the Orlando show. Floor seats. Yes. The Melvins were opening up. Whatever.
Nice.
You know, I mean, the Melvins were okay. And then we looked online. Like, you know, there's also a show the night before in Tampa at the USF Sundome.
Uh-huh.
Let's check out those. And I looked them up. And there's plenty of seats available up there in those in the seats section. And apparently we had a spare $50 to kill each. I don't know how that happened. And we got ourselves tickets for the Tampa show. Just Aaron and myself.
Nice.
So Aaron and I drove to Tampa. Saw him at the USF Sundome. And we were sitting at the top. So for that show, we were sitting.
Yeah.
Right? So we got the sit-down experience. It was a lot of songs off Lateralis. And actually, they played like six songs off Lateralis, right? Yeah. And then like three or four off Anima.
Yeah.
And then maybe one off Undertow.
Man.
The next night...
They played Anima when I saw them.
Did they?
They don't play Anima ever.
They played Anima one of those two nights.
Yeah, well, that was 2003. I'm talking nowadays.
Oh, nowadays.
They don't play Anima anymore.
Well, no, even back then, there are certain songs they never played, like H. They never played H.
No.
No, was it H or Push It? No, H. They never played H, and they played H the second night I was there. They never played Sober.
Never.
That tour, they played Sober one time before, and that's when they did two nights at Madison Square Garden back-to-back, because they sold out both shows in New York. The second night they played Sober. For whatever reason, hair up their butt in the Orlando show of that tour, they played fucking Sober.
Yeah, they did.
And so whoever was there, if you remember that, you saw something special.
Because
right?
Not many people have seen that live.
Yeah, not since the 90s anyway. It was awesome because in Tampa, I got to see them from the seats. In Orlando, we got there super early, like hours before they even opened the doors, let people into the arena early, you know? Waiting. Like, this is going to be worth it. They open the doors. We rush in. We get down to the floor. Dude. Guardrail.
Ooh, right up front.
Right. First row. Guardrail. Tool was 15 feet away from me. The whole night. and it was a bitch, dude, trying to stand that guardrail. Cause
I'm sure. Hold on for your life, bro. A
couple hundred people behind you pushing forward. They're trying to get up. They want your spot, bro. And they will kill you for it. Me and Johnny the Hater. Johnny the Hater and myself grabbing onto that guardrail. And Johnny's yelling me, don't let go. I'm like, I got it, bro. I got it. And like, we're not going anywhere, bro. And we were there the whole night. The giant stack speaker right in front of us. Whenever like really deep bass hit, I felt it shaking inside me.
And your hearing was blown out for a couple days after that,
yeah,
I remember.
Yeah, the little giant speaker.
I remember you
right
stood up. I said, look at the speaker, what?
What? What was that? Was that? Did you say something? Oh, God. Such a... Both nights. So tight. So good. The songs they didn't play the first night, they played the second night, so I got to see everything.
Nope.
I got them from both experiences, the seats, the floor. It was... God. The greatest. It was the best.
Yeah, very nice.
Ever, and you know what I heard?
Great show for Tool. I mean, Tool shows are always good.
Tool shows are always good. And you know what I heard?
What you heard?
In the grapevines.
On the grapevines.
10,000 Days came out in 2006.
Yeah,
that's a long time ago.
Yeah,
about time for another Tool album. Maybe coming out this year.
Ooh, yeah. Does that mean another tour?
Yes, that it means they have to go on tour. You gotta make that money, you know. Yep. I read something very recently about how in like 2011, 2012, Danny Carey mentioned something about a Tool album being ready by 2014, mm-hmm. and then like a month ago, he was like in another interview, he was like, "Yeah, it's we're working on it. It's coming out soon." So it's it's lining up. So 2014 is looking like the year for new Tool, and hopefully it's gonna be better than 10,000 Days because that album is not really it's not that good.
It's definitely
it's not that good. The second night I saw him in Orlando, they played Part of Me off of Opiate. They played Part of Me and then they played Sober. I was like, these guys are going
what
through
is going
a time
on here?
Travel wormhole, man, and this is awesome.
Yeah.
Because last night it was all Anima and tonight it's all old stuff. So hey, wow, there you go. That's the top five concert experiences top five for me. Top five-ish.
In no particular order.
In no particular order. Good stuff, Drew. Good stuff. All right, so before we do, we'll close out the show, like the Crespo Disco, like we always do with whatever we're listening to these days, what we're hooked on right now. Before we do that, gotta mention ChrisCrespo.com. Please go there for movie reviews, your standard cinema Crespo Disco episodes. I probably should have mentioned this at the top of the show, but if this is your first time listening, this is a bonus episode. So if you want to hear the movie stuff, that's the Cinema Crespo Disco stuff. The Crespo Disco is the music. Anyway, long story. Just go back to the beginning and listen from the start, and it'll all make more sense. Hit me up on Twitter at @IamChrisCrespo. Hit up the show on Twitter at Crespo Disco. Email the show at cinemacrespodiso@gmail.com. Drew, how can people get you online?
At Antera419 on Instagram and Twitter.
All right. So, I'm trying to think of the order. I'll start out with my song, and then we'll close out the show with your song.
Okay.
All right. So, my song. I've been hooked on this band hooked. Like, really, really legit
hooked. Hooked, line, and sinker.
Hooked, line, and sinker. This band called Tesseract. Mm-hmm. I'm not big on the name. Kind of crappy name. Put out an album called Altered State.
Okay.
I think that's the name of the album. I should have wrote that down. And, I've been listening to it nonstop. I should know the name of it by now. Like, I mean, literally today, I listened to it maybe four times in a row while I was working.
That happens.
Maybe five times in a row, you know, because I just got to keep listening to it over and over and over. Right. And it's one of those albums where it's like eight or nine tracks, maybe 10. But they're split up into like, it's like three or four songs, but they're in movements. So like track one is like, you know, song one, movement one, song one, you know, so shit like that. So it's cool. This is the the third track, which makes it the end of like the first section. This song is called Resist. It's awesome. And then we'll follow that up with your song, which is?
It's called Awake by this guy named Tycho.
It's not Tycho?
Nope, Tycho.
Tycho.
It's this weird kind of, it's electronic.
Yes.
But it's very light and airy. Mm. And every time I listen to this guy, like it sounds like I feel like I should be in an old Corvette with the top down. I've got an attractive blonde next to me, got my sunglasses on, and I'm driving down the Pacific Coast Highway. Like, that's when I close my eyes and listen to this music, that's what it feels like I should be doing.
I like it. Maybe I should start listening.
Yeah, and then
I want to have that feeling.
The name of the song is Awake. Mm-hmm. It's off of his brand new album that just came out, Awake. And actually, I'm pretty sure I'm just about to buy tickets to go see him on April 25th.
Oh, wow, really?
So
there you go.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, and that's going to be my next concert experience.
Very nice. So thanks a lot for downloading, guys. We appreciate it. Make sure you tell your friends, share the love, rate us and review us on iTunes and Stitcher. And yeah, here's some music.